Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. That's Bob Mackowitz. Bob, how you doing?
I'm good, Matt. Quick question for you before we get to the Raps and the Leafs and a million other things. At Halloween, are you the kind of person who watches AMC more because it's all horror movies, or AMC less because it's all horror movies?
More.
Yeah. It's you can only take so much CP24 or CNN or Fox and Friends or Tucker Carlson or Rachel Maddow. See, I'm confusing everyone. I get AMC going on, and it's a lot of the bad Halloween movies, like the one with Paul Rudd in it and everything in between.
Halloween 5.
Yeah, like The Curse, and there's like Druids or something.
I was watching, I can't remember, which one is the one with Busta Rhymes, the one where it's the reality show in the house?
Yes.
Is that Resurrection?
Let's just go with yes, because there's been so many. Like, there's The Curse of, The Return. So, yeah, maybe Resurrection. I think that could be it.
I can't decide whether Halloween is an amazing franchise or a shit franchise with one utterly incredible movie.
It is somewhere in between that. There's been like about three to four really good ones, and then the rest have been just utter garbage.
Which franchise gives us more, Halloween or Friday the 13th?
Halloween gives us more. And I say this as someone who, you know, loves Friday the 13th and loves Jason Voorhees, but there's just been more done with it. And, you know, you had Rob Zombie do a really good one. You now have the people of Blumhouse taking over it. So, you know, the right now Halloween has to win that.
I think you're right. And Halloween is really just Michael Myers and Jamie Lee Curtis. And the fact that they've been able to keep bringing Jamie Lee Curtis back for stuff keeps the franchise going. Whenever they've moved away from that, it doesn't really work. And whenever she's there, it kind of always works, even if it's not good.
Yeah, and Friday the 13th doesn't have that star power. It doesn't have that Jamie Lee Curtis. So and that's played a big part. I will say the first Rob Zombie Halloween, which didn't have Jamie Lee Curtis, was really, really good. The second one was just strange and stupid, but the first one was really good.
Rob Zombie's a pretty interesting talent.
Yeah.
You know what? So I'm watching the reboot of Child's Play with Charlotte the other day because she's creepy and she likes horror movies.
Yep.
And there's just some really inventive kills. And it got me to thinking about modern horror, which is all about trauma and psychological underpinnings of horror. And there's been some really great stuff made there, too. But can someone make a movie that's about trauma and has awesome kills?
Oh, Bob, I've got the movie for you. And it has the word. And it has the word kill in the title. It's called Halloween Kills. It's the latest Halloween movie done by Blumhouse. I saw it two nights ago. And the first half is really, really good. Eventually, they go a little over the top, and there's some weird stuff with they bring back Tommy Doyle. But if you want some interesting kills, Halloween Kills is right up your alley.
The first death in Child's Play has Christmas lights and a lawnmower involved, and I was impressed.
Oh, I love it. Nice.
You know, and I was watching with Charlotte, and I almost never, like, we just watched Annabelle, and I never had to cover her eyes once. But for Child's Play, I had to cover her eyes just because of the arterial spray.
Bob, I'm so glad you've said this and you've opened the door up. So Amy and I went to see Halloween Kills on Tuesday night, and in front of us was a family, and there was two or three kids that were definitely under 8 years old, 100% under 8 years old. And I was so shocked to see children that young. I assumed we were in the wrong movie theater.
Having your parents cover your eyes is an important rite of passage for both child and parent.
Yes.
As a child, it's your introduction to a world of adult stuff. And so it doesn't happen all at once. Kind of the, it's like a learn to swim class, right? Like you just don't jump into the deep end. You know, you gotta work your way out there. So, you know, when things are bad, you cover the eyes. It's also a rite of passage for the parents who learn that your kid's not a fucking adult. And maybe like, it's not a good idea to have someone's watch her, you know, have someone put a lawnmower over someone's head.
Yeah. like there is a difference. Charlotte is old enough where, I mean, I think still be a little bit young for Halloween Kills, but these kids were like, I'd say at least 3 years younger. And it's not like it's a PG-13. You know, this is a hard R. I just shocked. Amy and I, and listen, I'm the cool guy, laissez-faire uncle who wonders why parents, you know, are spend a little too much time in the helicopter. And even I'm like, what are you kids doing here? Get out.
There is nothing worse than really strict parents, except for really cool parents.
Oh yeah. Like, and I don't want to do that, the parenting thing, because I know it gets people's back up. I'll just say that I don't think the goal of a parent is to be best friends with your kid. It's to be friends and all the positive things required. But my best friend was Dave Peary. It wasn't Ann or Lou.
Okay, so I'm going to take this one step further.
Go, go, go. You one should. I shouldn't.
One of the greatest lessons my wife ever gave me was when we first started dating. And I was cracking some jokes like, you know, she was one of my buddies. I can't remember it wasn't terrible, but like, I'm going to make it up. Let's say I was laughing about other women or something. And like she's in on the joke. Right. And she looked at me with her face stone as a statue and just said, I'm not your friend.
That's awesome.
Well, what it really taught me was people are like, oh, you got to be a friend with your partner. That is true. However, it is not the only thing you are with your partner. There are other dimensions to it as well. So when you say you're not supposed to be a friend to your kid, you are supposed to be a friend to your kid, but not the way their other friends are. Like, different relationships have different contours, different nuances, and sometimes even different goals altogether. You can be friends with your spouse, but if you are only friends, then they're your friend. That's
clearly not
what it is. So there's something else to it. And that's true of being a parent too, is you have to be on good terms with them. They have to trust you. These are all qualities that friends have. But I don't tell my friends what to do. I don't reprimand my friends when they didn't do what I asked them to do. Like, I don't call up George and I don't say, what the fuck? Like, this room isn't going to make itself.
That'd be weird for George. I think he'd be really confused. By the way, Bob, how do you feel when either at a wedding or you're just around other married people and they say that their wife or their husband is their best friend? I always look at that and I'm like, huh. And sometimes I comment. I try not to. But I hear that and I'm like, really? Like, I don't know. It's just, it. How about I just say this? It bumps me. It bumps me a little bit when I hear that.
I guess I try to anticipate what I think they mean by it, which is, my spouse is the person to whom I am closest in the world. And that makes sense. And I relate to that. I get that.
Yeah.
But they are my best friend. I don't know. It sounds kind of like a cult.
Yeah. Yeah. It's got a David Koresh-y flowing robe sort of thing going on.
You know, I always think to myself, you should probably like trade in your Peloton, get a real bike and go outside.
Yes. Yes. And by the way, speaking of getting outside, let's talk about the Raptors, because I was at the game.
Oh, yeah. We've done enough sort of life, back and forth. Let's talk Raptors. Where do you want to start, buddy?
It was awesome. It was the best.
Did you go? Were you there? I was there.
Amy and I, you know, we went out for a bite to dinner before. We went into the ACC the moment they opened the doors. We wandered around. I ran into former OTR guest Joe Motiki. I ran into a couple people. There was lots of hearty hugs. It was wonderful, which is hilarious because that game, after the Raptors started out 5-0, they weren't able to hold on to the lead.
We didn't know that at 5-0, that was going to be about 30% of their scoring for the evening.
Oh, God.
So I want to get back to the actual event, because the game, you know, we can talk about it, but it is one game. So you kind of have to put an asterisk on everything. But what you don't have to qualify is that event. From TV, that looked so fun.
It was. It was. It was even more fun. Like, just the sense of anticipation that we're back, you know. And this was this mini little defiant moment of, you know, against COVID, not against COVID protocols or being safe, because everyone in there was vaccinated. But it was just this, even as I said, it's even beyond slice of normal. It was, no, I'm going to, and I always have to say the right way, because you don't want to be like, I'm going to live my life, because then people translate that into some negative things. But it was just fucking awesome to be back there. We made friends with the people next to us, everyone cheering, everyone into it. And the funny thing is, today, Bob, I am going to be like, just, I will not do my job as a broadcaster analyzing what I saw, because it's just not in me today.
I've got an observation I want to make, and I am going to talk about the game a little, but
before.
I just want to sidebar real quick to a moment in the in our friendship. One of my favorite Matt moments in my whole life was when we went to go see that Knicks game during the playoffs. When the Raptors played the Knicks, and you and I got drunk ahead of time, and you started heckling Marcus Camby. That was one of my favorite all-time hanging out with a buddy experiences. Like, we got tickets for like under $200 each, and we were like practically under the basket for a playoff game. It was incredible.
It was ridiculous how cheap those seats were for a playoff game.
They were so cheap. We were probably only, what, about 20 rows up?
Or not even.
Maybe, not even. And we got up in front of $200. God, you couldn't even get popcorn at the arena now for under $200. Where did you sit? I forgot to ask.
Yeah, upper part of the lower bowl, sort of a corner seat. Good seats, like you can see everything. So these tickets were more expensive than what we paid, but it was totally worth it, even for the $21 for 9 ounces of mass-produced Chardonnay. So it was good seats. You know, we had a bunch of guys behind us who were the right sort of rowdy. It was a great atmosphere. I know I'm just kind of repeating myself, but it was so nice to be back, and Fred VanVleet speaking before the game. It was well worth it. I'm glad I watched it live, because if it was on TV, I would have walked away at the half.
So before we get to the game, a couple of quick observations. The first one being, one thing I love about the Raptors, and we've talked about this for years, is that the video, the fan video, the essentially corporate video, if you want to, you know, cut to the chase, you see people from diverse backgrounds all over it. And usually when corporations put out videos with diverse backgrounds, it feels like there's a PR group pointing a scimitar in their back and forcing them to do it. But the thing I love about the Raptors is that's actually the crowd. That's actually the crowd. You know, as much as any other sport in this city, and certainly more than some, it really does invite the really wide range of kinds of people you meet in Toronto to be fans. And that's always been cool. It feels like new Toronto more than anything else. The other thing is, it's always Cardinal, but I don't care because I love Cardinal.
Yeah, it is.
You know, It's always Cardinal, but, you know, if he's going to do the anthem, I'm all for it. And then also, this is maybe unfair, but maybe it isn't, the joyous celebration of the Raptors coming back to Toronto stood out even more because of how dowdy and dour the Leafs celebration was in the same way. Like, when I look back to the Leafs, it almost felt like a random Monday against Carolina in April.
Yeah. And you know what, Bob, that, by the way, talking about just a diverse group, shout out to Saj and Nithu, the couple that was sitting next to Amy and I that we immediately became best friends with. And afterwards, they're like, we should go out for drinks. And I'm so glad in the end, I'm like, I got to prep for my show for tomorrow, because it would have been a messy night. But you're right. You're right about the difference. And you know what this, to me, the one thing this screams to, and it's many things, but one of them is, it's the old cliche, just the cologne that comes with winning. You know, we've seen the Raptors do plenty of winning. We've seen the guys that are still left do plenty of winning, and we are so much more forgiving. If Mitch Marner had a Fred VanVleet night, we'd be even more upset. But a lot of winning, so it buys you time.
And I'll extend the winning argument a little bit. It feels like the Leafs can't do a celebration unless there are at least 10 former Leafs that you like more than the current team in the building.
Yeah. Wendell, get down here quick.
Four season. Yeah. Wendell Clark, Dougie, you know, any number of guys, you know, they just trot out. And it, to me, like, you know, that's our history. So it's pretty cool. But on the other hand, it also speaks to, after Matt Sundin, who do we love again? Like, who have we actually bonded with? You know, anyway, I want to talk at least a little bit about the game, because when I said when I said I was taking the under at 35.5 wins for the Raps this year, uh-huh, and you thought it was low, I just want to know, do you still think it's low?
Yes, I still think it's low.
Think they're going to win more than 36 games?
Yes, I think they have 36 wins in them.
Okay.
I'm sticking with this. It's, you know, there's still got to be the return of Pascal Siakam. I think this game just, the moment was too big for them. I have enough faith in Nick Nurse and the leadership group that that won't happen.
So my concern is this. The things that didn't look good against Washington, apart from the shooting, which was atrocious, there were some good looks around the rim, and then again from three, you assume they're not going to shoot that low a percentage. But some of the systemic problems, I just don't think they have the players to fix right now. And I come back to this, you know, one, everybody knows that they're challenged in the middle. You know, like Precious Achiuwa is not really a center. Ken Birch is a backup center who's not even really a center. And the fact is, the no-name bigs for Washington dominated them, you know, which tells me pretty much any team is going to dominate them in the post. But the backcourt to me is a concern, and it goes back to Kyle's not here. Kyle was a great player, and Fred was a good player, like really good, like just sub all-star level. So you've got great all-star level main guy, and his Robin is someone who could be an all-star too in the right circumstances, and that's a hell of a backcourt. But you get rid of the really good guy, now you move the other guy up. It's not like he suddenly became better because now he has more opportunity. And you move someone into his spot that's not as good as he is. So you went from great and very good to very good and, you know, okay. And that's your starting backcourt, a really good player and a passable replacement level player. Malachi Flynn, we'll see. And Fred can't really run an offense the way that Kyle did. And in a weird sort of way, people have been saying this, and I think we're going to see this a lot this year. Fred's the point guard, but he's better off the ball. He's better when the ball is moving and he can be in motion and he can get the ball and spot up and shoot. But when he has to slow it down and be methodical, like that was Kyle's sweet spot, everybody knew where to be, everything ran on time. I don't think that's Fred's skill set. Prediction: within the next couple years, Scotty Barnes is going to be basically point forward. But for now, while he's learning how to do that, I think you're going to see a lot of nights where they're just grinding to find a good shot, you know, and it'll be nice when some of the ones do drop. But even when they drop, like, they got their asses fucking kicked by the Washington Wizards. And I don't think, miraculously, they're going to play way better again.
A lot to unpack there. First, Montrezl Harrell is really angry at you, Bob, for saying no-name centers. He's very upset at you right now.
He played really well.
He did. 9 of 11 for 20-plus points off the bench. And no, the point is a good one. Like, the one thing Lowry could do was he would stop opponents' runs. He would get to the net, hit his free throws, and help to reset the Raptors' offense. They don't have that. And Van Vliet is never going to be as good as Lowry. It's not going to happen. And that is the big loss. The big loss is you lost Lowry, and now Van Vliet needs to find a Van Vliet, and one doesn't exist. And really what this comes down to was, if this was Batman and Commissioner Gordon was like, uh-oh, here comes Joker, and Robin is like, I can handle this. Commissioner Gordon's like, oh, really? Hey, it's great that you're here, Robin, and we all want you here. We're all thrilled. But could you get Batman to help you out on this one? It is the Joker, you know.
Yeah. You know, Robin, you know, Batman and how good he is at this. Well, the Joker gives him a pretty hard time. So, you know, there's a reason for that.
And listen, Robin, we're going to need you. There's going to be a moment where one of the henchmen has got a billy club and he's about to hit Batman and you're going to stop him. You're going to stop that henchman. But then after you do that, guess what Batman's going to do? He's going to stop the Joker. So, again, you if you what? Could go rustle up the Batman, that would be great.
If I was still in sports, this would inspire me to write an article, Fred Van Vliet or why Robin is not Batman.
Yeah.
This is like a senior thesis waiting to happen.
Yeah.
and here's the thing, when you look at that championship team, like, for, you know, he was still emerging. He was still, you know, he wasn't a new player, but he was not being counted upon in the same way. And he hit amazingly big shots. And in some games, it was just him and Kawhi. And God bless him, Fred helped us. And we love Fred. And this is not a knock on Fred. But Fred was, at the absolute maximum, the fourth best player on that team.
Yes.
And last night, he was the best player on the court. And I say that with apologies to OG because everyone's already handed him the MIP, but he has to prove it. And at least based on the guys we've seen up to this point, I would put Fred ahead of OG in terms of how much I trust him to have a good game in a big spot. And, you know, OG is without Pascal there. He's being asked to do a lot more. Don't know if he can do it or not. I guess we'll find out. But the fourth best player on a championship team is the first best player on a shit team.
It's true. I my counter to that. What's that, Bob?
That's what I saw last night. Was these guys who are hangovers from the championship team were important pieces at best of that team.
The pushback, and the thing is, everything you say makes sense. I'm not even arguing with you. I think we see better versions of these guys. Siakam will come back, and I'm going to need to see a longer stretch of shit before I'll get off my, they'll hit 36 wins, which again, isn't a great total. You know, it's still under 500, but I'm also going to go on what we've seen from Vegas is they always undersell the Raptors. So I think they'll undersell them again this year. Now ask me near New Year's and there might be a new opinion or they're playing better and your opinion might change by New Year's.
Now, what you didn't see because you were there, but we who watched it on TV did see, was the interview that Kayla Gray did with Masai Ujiri in the Causeway, where he used the words rebuild and young, I would say, six or seven times in two or three sentences.
Well, I did not know that.
So the team president, the super president, as we like to call him, basically came out, and when she asked him, so what can you expect from this year? And he said, well, it's a rebuilding year. We're retooling. They're very young. We're rebuilding. It's a rebuilding year. Mm. I think that tells us two things. One, they're managing expectations, right? But also, two, don't fall in love too much with some of these guys. Like, they feel like they have young, talented players, but they're at the beginning of a new process, which tells me that if they're in ninth place, you know, come trade deadline, and they have a shot to just make a play-in game, they're not going to lift a finger. In fact, if anything, they'll be sellers because they want to be good in 3 years more than they want to make the playoffs this year. So that's one of the things that I think will keep the win total down at the end of the season, is I expect them to be a worse team at the end of the season than they are now. Pascal, I don't know how now to figure it.
Yeah, I'll say that Masai, the amount of times he said young and rebuild, that makes me a little bit nervous. I'm still going to stay on this side of things because if you look at all the injuries and COVID and everything that happened last year, and yet the team, even with them losing like 10 of their last 11 games, they still were barely outscored on the season. So I'll still go with the bones of this team is better than you think it is, but the Masai use of the word rebuild and young, yeah, I won't lie, makes me a little nervous.
Last night, I don't know how it looked there on TV. It looked like poor Scotty Barnes is just going to have to live with five fouls every game because he's never going to get a call.
Oh God, yeah, he got like, listen, early on they called a charge on him on this great play that should have been an N1, and none of this was going to lead to the Raptors winning. I'm not saying that, but yeah, he got hosed. He got rookied by the officials last night.
Yeah, it was a real, like, again, on TV, because you have the benefit of multiple replays and you see things slowed down, there were some calls that you think, that's just, like, such a drag, because the kid actually did a really good job. But it just felt like, I thought the officiating was generally bad. I don't know how it felt in the arena, but watching it, it felt like, when Nick Nurse got teed up, it kind of felt like, oh, we got an officiating crew that thinks they paid to see it. Like, they think the home crowd is like, oh, yay, it's been 600 days since we've seen this guy ref. I'm so excited to be here.
I know. You just
want it to be the story.
Yeah, it's like, listen, dude, go hang out with Laz Diaz and have some drinks about how much you like to ruin people's nights. Yeah. Oh, no, you could tell. Like, I have good enough seats where I could tell. I'm like, that's not a foul. You know, So, yeah, Scotty Barnes got hosed last night.
You know, when you watch the first few Leafs games and they were like all the little sort of ticky-tack slashing penalties, you know, that just feels like that's the refs being told by the league, here's how we're going to call it this year, overcall it so the players get the message and then we don't have to deal with it 40 games in. That's not what it felt like last night. What it felt like last night, and I hate this, was a rook's just not going to get a call. It's stupid. It's sort of like, you know, does an umpire not call a strike that looks like a strike because a rookie threw it?
I know. Yep.
It's stupid. It's the best argument for automation is, you know, that these biases are dumb. Quick thought here about OG before we move on to another topic.
Yep.
I'm not too worried about him because he looked awful and I don't expect him to be worse this year than he was. And for everybody who, Raptors Twitter is really funny. It's different than Leafs Twitter. Leafs Twitter are a bunch of catastrophists who are looking for what's wrong with everyone. Raptors Twitter, on the other hand, remind me of those parents I meet at the school who are convinced that their kid is the next Steve Jobs. And everything they do is an amazing thing that's so many years ahead of their level. Like, Raptors Twitter has decided, for whatever reason, that this year OG is like the next great forward in the league. And to even suggest that's not true is to hate him and you are an idiot.
Wait a minute. Hold on, Bob. Are you even hinting that that's not true? Because if you are, I will have to come and do to you what Michael Myers did to about 400 people in Haddonfield.
That's funny. Yeah. And I feel like you'd have to get in line because there'll be others there. There'll be others here faster. I was reading something on Twitter, just some random comment. Somebody was saying, you know, Pascal Siakam has a lot to prove this year. And this guy just like went to town with a thread on the suggestion that Pascal had a lot to prove. And I thought, okay, you've got a guy making max dollars whose production has dropped, who is suspended for insubordination from the team, and who has shown himself to be injury prone. You don't feel like that guy has something to prove?
I know, it's ridiculous. You're absolutely right. The Raptors' Twitter is much more protective. We can compare and contrast that with what you have the Leafs. But you're right about that. And also just on a bigger picture thing, to everyone out there, just however many times you decide to comment on something you disagree with from someone you don't know, one out of every seven times you do that, just move on. Make a bagel. Go for a walk. Do 10 push-ups. I don't know, but you'll be much happier in life if you just decide, I disagree with this fella. Hey, look, peanut M&Ms. Life's better now.
That is peak cause advice. So the cottage is closed up. Is this where we're not going to get any more beautiful Muskoka sunset photos on your Instagram feed?
It's true, Bob. It's done. The pictures of wine and sunsets and pan and French toast. It's done, Bob. It's done for a little while unless I get up to Amy's cottage and then it's just a different lake. So hopefully it can live on.
Sandra, it feels I go too far in my online criticism of your skyline posts.
They're so good. They're so good. I love them so much. I get thrilled when I see when I get the notification Bob Makowitz's comment on it, because I pretty much know I'm gonna get a paragraph on class warfare, and I'm here for it every time.
She's always like, you can't say that. He's going to get upset. People are going to think you're serious. To which I say, I hope he gets upset. And I mean it. It's something I really enjoy about being online is your Instagram feed. And you just refuse to change. That's the joy of it.
Oh, I'm not changing at all. Bob, if I drink a Chardonnay from a vineyard in Prince Edward County, and the next morning I use the maple syrup from that same vineyard on my French toast, I'm going to post it, baby. And I'm going to be so happy because guess what? I just had French toast.
Oh, okay. We haven't done this in a while. This is totally random, so I'm making these up off the top of my head. But why don't we do some Raptors wine pairings? Like, what would be the Scotty Barnes wine? And this would be something that's very new and very bold, but maybe a little immature.
I'm going to go with, and I forget the name of the winemaker, which is embarrassing because I actually interviewed him. They're trying to make more like Cabernet and Bordeaux style wines in China. And it's immature because the vines are very young. But I've tried the wines and they're big, they're bold. But you're like, okay, you guys got to go away for 5 more years. These vines got to mature. But you're definitely on to something. And the winemaker is a brilliant winemaker from the Alsace region.
Okay, maybe you'll figure it out and put it up on our Instagram feed later. Okay, so the Fred Van Vliet wine, a wine that is unspectacular, but whenever you see it on a wine list at a restaurant, you know it's probably going to be good. Not great, but good.
A good wine that is steady but not spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, okay. Because you know you never want to. Okay, steady but not spectacular. That is a hard one because you know with most wines there's always a steady but not spectacular. I'm gonna go with the Featherstone Black Sheep Riesling for under $20. It always delivers. It's never gonna blow you away. It's not its job to blow you away. It's its job to please you.
Okay, the Delano Banton, something Toronto adjacent, ideally from Rexdale.
Fruit wine. When you get just a little bit north of the city, and you can find some different fruit wines. So I'll go with that.
Can you name one?
I can't. It's near like Canal Road. You know, when you get like north of the north of Canada's Wonderland. There's some like in Muskoka. I can't remember a specific one, but yeah, like a north of Toronto fruit wine.
Okay, and last one is the Nick Nurse, where you get a whole bunch of different ingredients, and you have to try to find a way for them to come together into one basic taste.
Okay, I'm going to go with a Cote Rôti, which is a Northern Rhone Syrah. But the interesting thing, and I know this will be interesting, is that they still blend it with some white wine. You'll still get a little bit of like Viognier in the Syrah, and it can add different perfume texture to the wine. And it's big, it's powerful, just like Nick Nurse is big and powerful when the official they're hosing, Scotty Barnes.
And what was the name of that wine again?
It's from the Cote Rôti area. Let's just go with Gugel. You know, let's go with one of the Gugel Lala wines.
Okay, so this Gugel Lala, is it 6'8 with a big wingspan?
Oh, Bob, you try a Le Tarquette? That thing is 7'3 with an 8-foot wingspan.
Okay, well, then it can be a Raptors wine.
That is such douchebaggery by me.
I'm so proud of you. Nobody does it like you. This is the mm-hmm. this is the thing you were born to do.
It really was.
I want to talk some Leafs with you, but is there anything else you want to get into?
I think no. That's it for the Raptors. I'm so glad they're back in my life, and I promise to the listeners, if they keep stinking like this in the next couple games, I'll be back fully critical. But for today, it's more. I was just so happy to be there. Also, another thing I'm happy about, I'm happy that we got Jeff Pollock in our life. JeffPollock.com is the website. That's Jeff with a G, JeffPollock.com. Who is he? Glad you asked. He's our lawyer. If you need legal advice, legal help, and not even that you're in big trouble, you're on the lam. But if you are on the lam, fantastic. By the way, pair that lam with a Pinot. Anyway, 416-777-0088 416-777-0088. He is our lawyer. He should be your lawyer. He's fantastic.
Have you picked a Halloween costume yet?
I was going to go to Value Village yesterday, but I I just didn't have enough time. It's been like really busy last couple days. So, but I'm gonna get one. I might go tomorrow after the show before we go to the Halloween Haunt at Canada's Wonderland, which we are doing tomorrow night.
Oh, that's amazing. I think we might go too. What time are you going?
Right for 7 o'clock.
You know what? Maybe we'll meet you there because
that'd be awesome.
Oh, I want to do this with you so bad. And Amy, does she scream?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then Charlotte's going to be condescending to her because she's at that age where she doesn't want to admit she's scared.
Yeah. Oh, God, oh. It's the worst. Come on. Like, you know, those are just actors. It's like, okay, come on.
That's exactly it. It's not even scary. We're watching Annabelle and through the whole thing. She's like, it's not even scary. And we watched a bit of Child's Play and there was kind of a tense spot. And she jumps up off the couch and goes, I'm going to the kitchen.
That's awesome. Oh, that's good. She doesn't want to admit. By the way, Annabelle's got scary parts to it.
You know, she didn't think so. She wrote a report about it for school. My favorite part was when the priest was sent flying backwards by the demon at least 5 meters and landed and split his head open. She read that in her little Catholic church grade 6 class and all the kids cheered.
I wonder how the teacher did.
I'll find out on parent teacher night.
By the way, on a sidebar, before we get into the, or we'll continue with Halloween or with the Maple Leafs, because they're a scary team. Ooh, nice. But thank you. I know this doesn't get said a lot in modern times. I kind of feel bad for the clergy. I mean, how many movies is it where they're like, imagine you're a priest and you're like, oh, here we go. Oh, there's one of me in this movie. You know, they ain't making it. And if they do make it, they're going to have a hell of a time.
Matt, I understand your point. I'm not ready to dive in. I'm too angry right now.
All right.
So I can't do it. I want to support you. I usually do, but I won't this time.
Yeah. So my analogy that the clergy are basically like the one unlucky black guy in Star Trek. It's like, oh, I know who's not making it from Romulus.
Quick movie question.
Yeah.
Have you seen the trailer for Eternals?
I'm just not thrilled by it. It's not getting me at all.
Yeah, I was going to ask, why is it? Because there's a lot there that should be exciting, but it isn't. Why is that?
A couple reasons. Glad you asked. And a good smooth transition. One, I never really was big into the comics and stuff, so I don't have a background or an ownership with it. Two, I don't know what the fuck's going on. Like, I have zero idea what's going on. And three, like, who can defeat them? They're the Eternals. You know, like, it's who's the villain in this? So it doesn't feel like there's any real danger, you know, for these people. They just feel omnipotent. So, I can't get on board.
This is a great series of points. I want to seize on that last one about they're so powerful. It kind of feels like they're there not to be heroes, but they're there to set up villains that are super powerful, that are going to start to define the next phase of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, Kang is obviously incredibly powerful. Galactus is hovering out there. Mephisto has certainly been rumored tons of times, and at the very least, Dormammu and some of the, you know, demon lords of the Netherverse. I mean, we're talking about galactic villains. It's not Ultron. You know, I mean, this guy wouldn't, you know, Ultron wouldn't even be a butler to Galactus. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe this is like, you know, when a pitcher wastes a pitch, but you're still yes. trying to set up the strikeout over 6 or 7 pitches.
Yep.
Maybe this film is a $200 million wasted pitch because there's just things that need to get set up.
That's a great analogy. And I hope you're right because, you know, I'm down for something new because I never really followed the Eternals. But yeah, it just, you know, it's sometimes when the superhero is too powerful, it kind of bumps me. Like, I still am not sure what is... You know, what is Captain Marvel's weakness? You know, it's just like, oh, she appears and now she's a giant form of energy destroying everything. And I'm like, when are you ever in trouble? It's like Golden State with Durant. It's like, oh no, they're down by three in the second quarter against Memphis. I wonder what's going to happen.
They're down by 18 in the third quarter against Memphis. I wonder what's going to happen.
Oh, look out. Here comes grit and grind. Oh no, there's Steph and Clay and Draymond and Durant. Never mind grit and grind.
Hey, I got some random NBA questions now that the season has started up again that I want to go through before we get to the Leafs. Can I throw these out?
Do it.
Which player will take the bigger leap this year? Luka Doncic or Karl-Anthony Towns? Not who will be better, but which one will take the bigger leap from where they are now?
Oh, I think it's Kat. Just the last 2 years have seemed like a personal, you know, hell to him, and just all the tragedy that he's gone through, that, you know, he could absolutely take another step. Luka, the question is more about Luka, is can he be a little bit less of a diva, but can someone develop into a legitimate Robin, not a every now and then guy who helps?
They need Goran Dragic on the Mavs, and they should probably give us a first rounder for him. Moving on. Who will have the better year, DeMar or Kyle?
Kyle, like I saw DeMar's line yesterday, 1 3-pointer, a couple assists. Good, you know, fairly efficient day.
17-7.
Yeah, it was DeMar. He was doing DeMar things. But with Kyle Lowry, it's not just about what he can do, the veteran stuff, the scoring, but I think he can make Bam Adebayo a better player. And Bam's already, like, I know he made an all-star, but Kyle Lowry could really inject something into him and to Tyler Hero. I mean, Kyle Lowry could be this just super glue for the Heat.
I would also take Kyle, but I think it's a very close question. I think Chicago is going to be much better than people give them credit for. I think Zach LaVine's a hell of a player with Ball there now. Like, they've got some pieces now that make them a real team, and not just, even Vucevic is starting to look like he had a great game. I think, I don't know how good they are, but I'm pretty sure they're not bad anymore. And I think DeMar is going to be a big part of that. And I think it's going to be a nice and pleasant surprise, because for all of us who grew up Jordan fans, it's kind of sad when Chicago sucks. I don't know why, but a lot of us just have a kind of like, almost like muscle memory for cheering for the Bulls all those years.
They're a legacy team, Bob. It's like when the NFC East is bad. It's like, you know, those who grew up starting to get in football in like the 80s and the 90s. It's like, wait a minute, how come you guys are all bad?
Yeah, and I was thinking like the 49ers are my football team, where it's like, oh, but you guys are always so good. But, you know, then you remember, oh, yeah, that was the 80s and 90s. Montana and Young. It's been a while. Okay, last one here. You are Doc Rivers. Mm-hmm. Why did you throw out Ben Simmons? Was it A, to shake up Daryl Morey, or B, support the players on the court, or C, just you? You're just so sick of his bullshit. You have no plan. You just wanted to do it.
It's B first, then C, then A. Ain't no one going to shake up Daryl Morey. This was about the fact that, for Doc Rivers, like, I want to honor the guys on the court, and Ben Simmons, you are just being such a fuckwad that, just get out of here. I can't have you infect us anymore.
I think it's all three. It's probably B most of all, but I give more credence to A than you do in the shake up Daryl Morey part, because Doc's a powerful coach in the league. He has a powerful NBA presence. Daryl Morey's a smart guy. He's done a lot of smart things, but Doc is like a Hall of Fame guy, and he has gravitas. And I'm sure he's sitting there, and he threw him out to let Daryl Morey know, there is a point at which I'm not going to play this fucking game. I'm not going to tank this year. Joel Embiid is at his height right now, but he's also a center with a history of problems. You have an incredible asset out there that could turn us into a championship team this year. I want that championship. I want to show LA that I'm better than everyone said I was. Like, I'm sure Doc at some point has to be saying to Daryl Morey, you're going to have to zip it back up and make the trade. This is not about you. And it's better to have some stuff than nothing.
Yeah, I think it's Maury's waiting to get that piece that can make them into a championship. Unfortunately, Ben Simmons has ruined it with his attitude. And the one thing is you're right, Bob, about the gravitas of Doc Rivers. It is 100% there. But Daryl Morey took on China. LeBron James told Daryl Morey to shut up and dribble. And Daryl Morey, you know, didn't, you know, shrink. So if he can handle China, LeBron, the NBA saying, hey, you're costing us billions, I think he can handle Doc Rivers.
Okay. Well said. Any thoughts you want to get through on the Leafs? We've got about 10 minutes left in the pod, and we haven't talked any Leafs. They lose in overtime to the Rangers, and they split against Ottawa since we last talked. So any takes?
I really wish I did. You know, my only take is that the Leafs make me hate the expected goals statistic. It's a legitimate one. It makes a ton of sense. You know, it basically says you're a good team if you possess the puck and you outshoot your opponent. No stat is perfect. Obviously, there's context needed, but it's making me hate that statistic because let me tell you, Bob, the Leafs, woo, they are expected goaling the hell out of the first four games. But I don't know. It's weird. I don't have much strong opinion about this team right now. I'd rather giggle at Montreal being so bad.
There are certainly some fires around the league. The Leafs look pretty good. They should have beaten the Rangers. If they'd beaten the Rangers, they'd be 3-1 right now, and that would be a totally commendable start. They've played four games against three pretty bad teams. And they had their hands full against Ottawa. They did not beat the Rangers. They started slow against Montreal. No Austin Matthews for most of that. But to your point about not having a strong take, I don't think they've given us much to have a strong take about. They've been fine with a little bit of bad and some hot goaltending. You know, a couple hit posts, a couple hot goalies. On the good side of things, were you surprised, as I was, that Austin Matthews looked as game-ready as he did in that first game back?
Actually, I wasn't, because he probably could have played in the first game. But they were like, nope, we're going to easy in. So when you get going, you're going to get shot out like a cannon. And I think that was the plan, and he looked great. He looked great, and I think that was just the result of the team going, no, we're going to wait three games.
He feels like a 50-goal scorer. Who knows how much higher above? I mean, a lot of this is health, obviously. But the arguments for saying he's the best player in the league, it's always been, it's got to be Connor McDavid. And for a while, Nathan MacKinnon, he's that best player. But the difference between all of these, like, it's not clearly a gap between all those names now. I feel like you could just throw them in a hat and pull one out. He looked so good. You know what kind of shocked me, actually, Matt, was how much better he looked than Marner and Tavares. And how they're all making about the same money. But honestly, both Marner and Tavares looked like noticeably a level down from him.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
I'm worrisome.
Yeah, I know there is things to be concerned about. You know what, though? Okay, the only two things that really have stood out for me is Jack Campbell's looked really good, and so good. William Nylander's had two games with 20 or more minutes. You know, that for me is like I have some interest in.
Well, and I mentioned before, how do you get him more minutes? And suggested perhaps he should skate with Matthews, because that's a guaranteed way to make sure he's not going to be playing any 16, 17 minutes this year. And put him in a position to maximize this incredible skill that he has. And then I said, but it's not going to come on the penalty kill, but maybe it will. Honestly, like, we're starting to see them using him that way. It's about to become more of Nylander's team than it's ever been before. And that probably comes at the expense of Marner in a lot of ways. I'm not trying to set the two against each other. It's just like, there's only so much team to go around. And as Nylander gets better and better, I think that what we expect Marner to do becomes less and less, which again worries me because he's an $11 million guy. I'm kind of alarmed that we talk about where can we put Martyr for his best use. At $11 million, he should be the answer to every question. He should be the solution to other people's problems, not how do we get the most out of a guy who's literally one of the highest paid players in the world. Tavares is on the way down. Who knows? Does he get 60 points or does he get 80 points this year? I have no idea. But I do know this. Marner presented himself during his contract negotiation as 1B to Matthews. He does not look like that. He looks like a different cut of player.
Right now, and when you include the playoffs last year, Marner looks like the guy that Chief Gordon says, we're thrilled to have you here, but could you go get Batman? Because that's the Joker over there.
Yeah, so he's the Freddie Van Vliet?
He's Fred Van Vliet. And the thing is, at that money, he's got to be a Kyle Lowry.
He's making Batman money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's making Batman money, but he's only defeating the henchmen right now.
Do you know what they never said about Patrick Kane, which I guess is his most natural comparable from the recent past? Well, even now, but you know what I mean. Yeah. They never said about Patrick Kane, we've got to find a way to really draw something good out of him. Like, how do we put him in a situation to win? I don't remember anyone ever saying about Patrick Kane, you know, I mean, we just got to find the right environment for him to thrive. What I do remember about him, what people saying was, oh my God, he's incredible. And everything he touches is better.
Yep. And to be fair to Marner, you're right. You're 100% right. To be fair to Marner, he did that in the regular season, didn't show up in the playoffs. The process, you know, the underlying numbers look good for Marner, but the result's not there. And at some point, everyone's going to get real grumbly.
Well, and I kind of feel like I'm there now, to tell you the truth. And maybe it's unfair because I do think reasonably he's going to have minimum 75 points in anywhere between, say, 80 and 90 on the year. And that's pretty awesome. But to me, this was a step-up year. And whenever Austin's not in the lineup, there's a chance for somebody maybe who's in his shadow to really shine. You know, and I brought this up last pod, but it reminds me of when Crosby's out, as he frequently is, Malkin's numbers go up. They don't go down, go up.
Yeah.
And it's like if Matthews isn't there, Marner's production goes down. That's not acceptable. You actually have to be better when he's not there, not worse. That's what the money is for.
Yeah, the results have been wildly underwhelming. It's four games, but it's they've been underwhelming. It's like, okay, you played three bad teams and you played the Rangers and but the results, it's just four goals or was it eight goals in four games? It's a big plate of meh so far.
That's so funny because I actually wrote down next to Nick Ritchie, meh. MEH, literally. I'm going to give you some quick names. I just want your takes on them, okay?
Sure.
Michael Bunting.
Greasy like the bottom of my McDonald's bag.
Oh, very nice. Alex Kerfoot.
Hey, look at you. There you are. What line are you on? That doesn't matter.
Sandin.
Looks really good. You know, this is a guy, it looks like he has improved from last year. Sandin makes me less worried about the first defenseman injury.
Jake Muzzin.
Slowing down a little bit, but I'll give benefit of the doubt.
TJ Brody.
Haven't noticed him at all. Really haven't noticed Brody. Maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, maybe. It's a bit of a weird year, isn't it? And and finally, Sheldon Keefe.
He likes to swear a lot. He's like he's the white Richard Pryor.
He's got there's from the old mob days, there was a hitman. He wrote a famous book, a guy named Sammy the Bull Gravano. And I can't remember the name of his book. I think it's Consigliere, something like that. But sometimes Sheldon Keefe reminds me of that because when he gets angry, it's like he looks pretty intimidating.
Sheldon Keefe looks like he laughed in Goodfellas when they open the freezer truck and see the bodies.
That dude's on the hook.
Yeah. Yeah. Sheldon Keefe's like, ha ha ha, that's funny. Ah, it's a comedy.
And he's sitting there going, man, I love Layla. What a great song. He looks tough, man. Like, I'm really growing quite fond of that guy. And he looks like he puts up with zero bullshit. George interviewed Keith Richards the other day.
What would you have asked? Say that again? Wait,
George interviewed Richards the other day.
Oh, my God. When is that? When is that released? When can people listen to that?
It's coming up.
Yeah. Oh,
I don't have an exact day, but I thought of you because I thought, like, you don't really get nervous to meet people, but I bet you would have been nervous.
Yeah, he would be on a very short list of people I would be nervous to meet. I'd probably just ask. I want to just ask him the questions that would make him happy. So just tell me something about B.B. King. You know, I think I'd probably do something like that.
Chuck Berry, genius or super genius?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'd hit him with all the hard-hitting questions.
Okay, so I'm going to jump off the pod now, go and talk to Sandra, and see if we can't set something up where we all meet up at Halloween Haunt tomorrow.
Yes. Let's hit the Leviathan, get on all the roller coasters.
Well, the great thing about this, honestly, Matt, is you're going to be fun uncle cover for me because I can't do the rides anymore. I'm too old, and my center of balance is off. So you're going to be like my human shield. Like, there's the Yukon Striker, which she's been threatening my daughter for me to go on for years now. And I'll die. Mm-hmm. I'll die at the bottom, probably halfway down, really. And you're going to keep that from happening, Uncle Matt.
I can't wait to see the obituary of Bob Mackowitz, death by Yukon Striker.
That's funny. My tombstone will read Bob Mackowitz, the dates, and underneath, still mad.
Bye, Bob.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.